Good morning, everyone, and thank you, Ben, for introducing this panel. It's always a pleasure to be here. I think you oversold my contribution as a practitioner. My colleague Deborah's here as well. I think we are, though, people. I'm based in UNICEF in headquarters, and I suppose what we try to do is take forward the interests of practitioners, of people who are working in public health. And I've just come back from a week in Uganda, where we're working with people from 25 countries looking at experiences with using scorecards for reproductive, maternal, newborn and child health and how they can be integrated into national accountability mechanisms. And also looking at a financing mechanism, again, trying to, for integration. And I think the reason I'm interested to be in this panel and when I think about the role of human rights-based approaches is how can we support those people who may not talk of human rights judgments or law or human rights, the language, but are really moving towards non-discrimination, equality, participation, and trying to drive accountability. All of the things that are so fundamental to human rights practice. But I always see my role as in whatever we do is in supporting those people to work with their communities and to improve health outcomes and realize the right to health. And so in my contribution to this panel, I feel a little bit underqualified because I'm not presenting some pure human rights research, but is to think my own take on what do we need to do to improve the uptake of use of human rights-based approaches in public health and by health workers. Dare I say, we need to rescue human rights and health from being just the domain of lawyers. I hate to say that, given you're a dig at physicians, in that the law is very important, but as we know in public health, we use a whole range of instruments, and law is only one instrument. And we also need to think, how can human rights-based approaches be used in the delivery of health services at the community level to improve outcomes and realise the right to health? So I'd just like to start to think, and so I work particularly on child survival and child health, and these are two recent reports put out by UNICEF. One, a sort of progress report on an initiative called A Promise Renewed, where we aim to end preventable child deaths by 2030, and looking at where we are in that endeavour this year. And another, which looks at lessons from the MDGs, Progress for Children, and looks at what we achieved during the period of the Millennium Development Goals, but also identifies some of the challenges of the MDGs, particularly around equity, which many would argue, in a sense, suffered from lack of an application of a human rights-based approach. And so, whilst on the one hand, we have made tremendous progress, if we compare to 1990, when 12.7 million children died under five in that year, last year we estimate that only 5.9 million children died before the age of five globally. So that's tremendous progress. Of course, that's still millions of deaths too many. And most of those deaths, I think this audience perhaps would agree, can be seen in many ways as the violation of human rights, the violation of children's human rights, the violations of their parents' human rights, and the violation of communities' human rights. We don't always describe it in those ways. But if we look at the MDG period, despite the fact that in many countries we saw unprecedented rates of acceleration and reduction in child mortality, we often saw that alongside increasing disparities. And this is from my colleagues at UNICEF in the data and analysis team. And it's a complicated graph, but what it basically shows, if you look at the 36 of the countries that made the most progress, they're mostly low and middle-income countries, half of them did what we wanted. They reduced child mortality and they also reduced disparities. Here we're looking at the gap between the richest and the poorest quintile by wealth. But in half of the countries, what we saw was that we reduced child mortality, but disparities between the richest and the poorest actually increased. So the progress was concentrated in the better off. It's easier to reach the better off, whether they're wealthier, better educated, living closer to health facilities. And I think we'd all agree that this is not necessarily showing a human rights-based approach. And certainly with the SDGs, there's been a much greater emphasis on inequalities and equity and the need that not only to have progress at national level, but to disaggregate and really prioritise resources for the worst off. And again, just to show the need for a human rights-based approach, often people say, well, you know, you're dealing with very poor countries, with very weak health systems, with very challenging determinants of health. But globally, if we could scale up in the 63 highest mortality countries, the coverage of health interventions that we see in the richest quintile for everyone, we would avert 1.3 million of the 5.1 million deaths of children under five in those countries. That's 5.1 million out of the 5.9 global. So this is where the child deaths are concentrated. So we're not asking these countries to say, well, deliver health services if you're Burkina Faso like Sweden. We're saying, can in Burkina Faso, can we deliver services at the level that you deliver to the richest quintile, the richest 20% for everyone? Now, as we know, even in rich countries, that's a very difficult thing to do. We certainly know that in this country, and in all countries we see this disparities. But in these countries, the price, the cost of this inequality in the delivery of interventions is millions of people dying, millions of children dying. So in the rest of my presentation, having, I said, again made this claim that we really do need to see more of a human rights-based approach to public health because it has very material consequences. I would like to quickly outline what is a human rights-based approach in my understanding. And then think, well, given the potential of a human rights-based approach, why don't health workers make more use of it, and how can research increase the use of human rights-based approaches? So, and I draw on this from the understanding of WHO and the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights. So essentially, a human rights-based approach is efforts to realise the right to health, focusing both on healthcare, but also the underlying determinants of health. So nutrition, education, gender equality, addressing poverty, water and sanitation, etc. And both are equally important. The underlying determinants of health is human rights speak for the social determinants. But you need action on both. And then these key principles, some of which are familiar to human rights discourse around the importance of, in terms of participation, equality, non-discrimination and accountability, but also considering the availability, the accessibility, the acceptability, and the quality of facilities and services. And interestingly, that framework is also driven from health service analysis, something called the Ta-Nehisi framework from the 70s, which also looks at those dimensions that you need to address health services. And in fact, when in 2000 that framework was adopted, it strongly drew from that health systems framework. But it's not just about outcomes, it's also about the process. And so you need a participatory, inclusive, transparent, and responsive process. So I think this is an understanding of human rights-based approach to health. But that said, when you talk to people in the health sector and public health, most people can't clearly define what a human rights-based approach to health is. And among those who do, there are different understandings and the definition varies. And this is one of the challenges. And so why don't health workers make more use of human rights-based approaches to health? And when I say make this claim that health workers don't make enough use of it, I think probably most of you would agree with me from your own experience. But to give you one example, I've worked at WHO, now I work at UNICEF. WHO, in its constitution, affirms the right to health, the right to the highest attainable standard of health. It's in its motto and its slogan. UNICEF, all our work is oriented around the Convention of the Rights of the Child, which again identifies the rights of children to healthcare services and to action on the underlying determinants of health. And so we are very much rights-based organisations in practice, but when you look at what we do, and there was a recent evaluation in UNICEF of the use of human rights-based approaches, there was often a sort of understanding at the broader level and a commitment to human rights in what we do. But when you looked at the genuine use of specific human rights mechanisms or tools, there was much less uptake. So even among a community that perhaps has more awareness than many about human rights, there's still this challenge. And why is that? I think one is fundamentally a lack of understanding of human rights-based approaches. So what is the overall approach and what is the specific tools? And the breadth of instruments that can feed into a human rights-based approach. So yes, law and legal instruments, which are very underutilised by health workers, but also tools that can be used at community and district level. How do you incorporate the principles of equality, of non-discrimination, of accountability? That this is all part of a human rights-based approach, and there's a suite of tools that can assist. And I think the database is a very valuable resource. But moreover, and more worryingly, I think people sometimes think, well, yes, there's human rights, and yes, the principles need to be in documents, but what's the real practical relevance when I'm delivering services of human rights-based approaches? In particular, there's a concern that is there really evidence that human rights-based approaches make a difference to health outcomes? And health workers are very pragmatic and practical people, as in a generality. They're very focused on what they can do for the people in front of them, or if you work in public health, what are the health outcomes for populations? And I think we need to be honest, there is a lack of evidence on the specific contribution of human rights-based approaches for on health outcomes. Paul Hunt and colleagues recently in 2013 with WHO did a very good monograph that maybe some of you have read, and I'd recommend to you, on what is the evidence of impact on maternal and child health, on women's and children's health, of human rights. And they said that their conclusion was that there is evidence, but there was a lack of evidence overall. It was plausible there was a contribution to health outcome impact. But moreover, there was a real lack of research that looked at the impact of human rights-based approaches. And I think this is a real challenge. We all know that evidence-based policy isn't quite as clear-cut or rational in real life, that policy-making and program design is political, reflects power, isn't purely based on evidence. But evidence is a very important tool to shift and advocate for different ways of doing things. The other reason I would say is that there is an implicit use of human rights-based approaches in public health practice, often without calling it so. So in UNICEF, for example, our key approach is equity. We want to focus on the worst off quintile. There's a big focus on better use of data with participation at community and district level to drive accountability. So in many ways, is that a human rights-based approach? Even if people don't identify it as such, I think these are other things that perhaps sometimes the challenge is that we're looking for evidence of impact when we're explicitly using the language and the instruments. And should we be really thinking about what's the impact of prioritising equity, of ensuring participation, of driving accountability? And the monograph, to its credit, does consider some of those issues. So what research can increase use of human rights-based approaches, to conclude? I think firstly, even though I've talked about this evaluation, I'm sure others have different experiences of understanding why health workers don't make more use of human rights-based approaches. But I think we need more research on that itself. Like, what are the constraints to using human rights-based situation analyses or participation tools or accountability frameworks or using the legal judgments and using judicial activism? But as I said, I do think we need to shift the emphasis from less solely on legal instruments to instruments across public health, which of course is such a multidisciplinary field. Linked to that, I think we need a greater focus on interventions in health services and at the community level. The upstream legal and policy measures are of course very important, and of course in public health we've often tried to argue for more of a focus at the upstream level on determinants. But we shouldn't ignore the contribution of health services, and that in the end, people receive services in the community level. That's where you see the outcomes from policy decisions and program design. So we need to think about, well, what are the tools and what is the impact of human rights-based approaches at service delivery level. We need mixed methodologies. The monograph called for this. So obviously, quantitative approaches by themselves cannot evaluate these sort of measures, as they can't with a whole range of policy design and program design initiatives. So we need mixed methods, more use of qualitative and focus groups techniques. Also bringing in knowledge from political science, from anthropology and other disciplines. And finally, I'd like to suggest that we need to make more use of implementation research, because I think this is a field that can really convince practitioners on what is useful. Implementation research is a scientific inquiry into questions concerning implementation. But rather than looking for generalizable impacts from trials or experimental studies, it looks at specific contexts. What factors affect implementation? What are the processes of implementation themselves? And what are the outcomes or end products of the implementation? So it can consider implementation problems, obstacles and bottlenecks, how to test solutions to overcome these barriers, and how to determine the best way to introduce new innovations or new methods. And what I don't think we've seen enough of is implementation research on the use of human rights-based approaches. I've seen almost none of this, which I think would really be very convincing for practitioners. This is how human rights-based approaches can help you solve your delivery problems, help you improve outcomes for your communities, helps you reduce disparities and realize the right to health. So in conclusion, I think we need to better understand the resistance by health workers to use of human rights-based approaches. We need better evidence on its impact, and I really do think that's crucial. That still needs to be mobilized so that we do see increased use and increased recognition of what is a human rights-based approach where it's already being implemented, a greater focus on the delivery of services and on interventions in communities, and we need a call for new methods. And very exciting to hear this range of research from the panel, but a plea to perhaps also consider the use of implementation research when considering the use of human rights-based approaches. Thank you.